Welcome to SelfDiscoveryWisdom.com, formerly known as Self Discovery Media. On these podcasts, you're going to hear people who speak from the heart. They've taken the journey in life. Many things have happened to them, but they've changed it to happening for them. And in their strength, their courage, they've discovered their abilities and their wisdom, and they are now sharing it here with you. Do enjoy each show. We bring it to you with love and knowing that it's going to help you on your journey of life. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of An Author's Kiss, right here on selfdiscoverywisdom.com. I'm your host, Sarah Troy. My guest today is Sam Hawksmoor. We're going to be talking about his latest book, The Restoration of Amy. So what does a cult, a retired man from NASA, and a 57 Studebaker got in common? Well, Remy has one last obsession, the NASA gentleman, to complete the restoration of his 57 Studebaker Golden Hawk. He planned a road trip to Montreal to find a part that he desperately needs. It's a long way from Florida, and his Chevy truck, almost as old as he is, there are doubts that he'll be able to make the drive, doubts that his bladder or his heart, but he's determined. At the very first urgent stop in the pouring rain, a dog appears out from nowhere and jumps into the truck quickly, followed by a drenched, scared teen. The girl urgently needs a ride. Amy has escaped from a religious cult, desperate to find her mother who abandoned her there when she was five. It's been a traumatic 10 years for her there, and she has to protect her Stan the dog. Remy agrees to take her to find her mother, but he has doubts that the woman who has easily abandoned her child would welcome her home again. This is Amy's one plan. Remy knows the cult will be looking for her. This might not end well. The old man, desperate teenage girl, Stan the dog are on the road to a mega America. Montreal seems to get further away with each mile that they travel. So quite an intrigue book, which I got to read when I was visiting in England. I got to read it in its development. And fascinating. I love the way that you've brought all of these things together. I know that always there's a dog in every one of your books because of the passion of dogs. And Stan, they always have a personality of their own. And they all seem to be a hero as well in many ways. But having this young teenager from a cult, gentleman that worked from NASA, the dog and the Studebaker. How did that all come about?
Believe it or not, it began when I was helping a friend assess some damage in the old barn, 17th century barn that they had on their property. And we were moving hay bales, and it was a bit smelly in there because that's also where they also feed the sheep. And we moved some hay bales, and lo and behold, we found his father's old car that he'd stashed there sometime or other in the 60s. And my friend remembers a trip they did from Madrid to France, very hot. And that's what he remembers, just being really hot in the car, in this particular car. And then they assumed that the car had been stolen because no one had ever saw it again. And, you know, he was away at school and, you know, what happened to the car, Dad? The dad didn't remember because he got Alzheimer's.
Oh, no.
So the car has been in this barn for years, decades. And it was in not bad shape. The interior had definitely seen better days. And so eventually they found a relative who was prepared to take it on. And so that's where that story came from. And I put that story to one side to thinking one day I will use it, because I was writing the Repossession of Gina McGee at the time in their house. So
and it's always a muse for you, that house, isn't it? Every time you go visit them in France, that's where you kind of get your inspiration.
Yes, I miss going there now, because now it's an Airbnb.
Oh, no.
So, go there.
They've all been closed down here.
It's $800 a week. So, yes.
That sounds about right. Yes. One never knows when the story is going to come from. You know, how did you, all right, you put that on the hold. I know I'm going to tell a story about that one day, but how did it come about with the young girl and the cult? I know where the dog fits in, but the young girl and the cult, how did you marry those two together?
Well, the dog is, first of all, Stan is an Australian sheepdog.
Yes, because border collies, yes.
With a blue eye and a gray eye.
Oh, gorgeous.
And I actually do have a picture of him. I can show you on my phone. Well, does that work?
I
I don't
think so.
know.
We can try it and see.
I'll
I mean,
try it
the
on my
Australian
phone.
sheepdogs, border collies, they are just exquisite dogs and so intelligent.
Let me find Stan for you.
And of course, I know that dogs, even in space, you had a robotic type dog, always
Right.
that
I don't know
companion.
if that will work, but there you go.
Oh,
There's Stan.
beautiful. Oh, gorgeous. For those that are only listening, you've got to have a look because Stan is gorgeous. Maybe you could send me that picture and I'll put it in the show page there.
Well, yes, it's someone else's dog, but so they may not, may resent that somewhat.
Nah, show off
But
the
and the girl comes. It's an element, two elements there. I used to know a girl who looked after my mum, whose name is, she wouldn't want me to use it anyway, but she is, she wasn't allowed to go to school. It's a religious cult, and she managed to leave it and start a life eventually. But it's her that some parts of that, and has elements of Tabitha in there too, I think. So.
Yes, my daughter. A little bit, I can see that. I've done shows on cults, on people who left them, and people still think that this is just like a TV fantasy, and that, oh no, cults aren't around anymore, but they very much are, and it's quite interesting how they keep everybody so naive there, so that's the only world that they know. And
Yeah.
it's generally very warped, can be extremely detrimental, and a lot of sexual prowess going on, etc., which is what she was facing, and one of the reasons why she decided to escape.
Yeah. But I'll give you just a little sample of that. They've stopped at a roadside diner. The old guy has picked her up and the dog. And it's pouring a rain outside, which doesn't happen often in Florida, but when it does, it really
Yes.
rains. It's difficult to drive in. And they're in this diner. And it's the first time she's been in a diner. It's the first time she's having a cup of coffee. Everything's first for her because it's a cult that doesn't allow any modern life. No phones, no music, nothing, right? So everything
Very
is brand
Amish
new.
in many ways.
So, I mean, he's asking her questions and, the girl closed her eyes. She felt dizzy. Questions. She should have anticipated questions. She guessed she wasn't. He wasn't being mean. He seemed kind of kind, but Stan would have warned her if he was trouble. I don't know my mother's name, not her first name, only that she's called Hannon, just like me, I guess. Remy digested that as he sipped his coffee, deciding it was too strong and needed more creamer to dilute it. Well, that's a start. You have an address. The girl nodded. He only now noticed she had dark green eyes. I'm guessing she doesn't know you're coming, right? The girl nodded. Remy put his hands up on the table, taking a gentle tone. Here's the thing. My late wife, bless her soul, ran a charity for separated kids. She was big on getting fa broken families back together, devoted 20 years to it or more. So I know something about runaways and broken families. I'm thinking you haven't seen your mother in a very long time. That place you ran away from is a care institution of some kind. And you've been thinking about finding your mother for years, but only just recently found out where she lives. And now you want to know why she gave you up. Correct me if I'm wrong. The girl stared at him, open mouthed, astonished she could know this about her. Remy sat back in his seat. Her reaction told him it was right. You wouldn't be the first orphan who ran away to find a parent. You won't be the last. I have no special insights, kid. My wife is desperate to mend broken homes and hearts. I've seen hundreds of kids pass through our hands, every one of them, banking on all to finding an answer and an explanation, an apology, something that will make sense to them as to why they ended up in care. He offered her a gentle smile. I promise I'm not being cruel or cynical. I'm just trying to say I understand why you're on the road and why it's important to you. I guess you didn't have time to pack a bag, hey? Stan is the farm dog, right? She nodded. So it's about that. It's about, he knows that you don't just pick up a runaway kid and a dog. Well, it's different when you have the dog. It's already an interesting dynamic, and the
Yes.
reason he picks allows it is because he loves dogs. So that is it. But he also understands that this is, she's figuring, I'll go and find my mother who abandoned her at the age of 5, and everything will be right.
Yes.
And there must be tons of kids who do exactly the same of that. And it just can't be, it's just not going to end well. But so that's what this story is about. Well, obviously he's not going to allow her to be abandoned without giving away too much of the story. But at the same time, he's old. And he's got a bladder problem and whatever else. And so how does an old guy connect with a young girl who hasn't seen the world, has no idea about mobile phones or Instagram or WhatsApp or
Which
whatever,
is probably
nothing.
refreshing.
Well, yes. And I was just thinking about that today, is that it was in a way easier to write about a girl who knows nothing than at today's teenagers who are so overwrought and desperate to be liked,
I know.
etc. And it's and I'm not even sure I'm able to write that, the modern girl, thinking of my nieces and how overwrought they are about all the things that, how desperate they are to be popular, to be liked. And it's rather sad because, I mean, at school when we were kids, yeah, sure, there'll be some people who might like you, but you didn't need 1,000 people to like you or 100,000 people. You didn't
No,
need
you
any of
had
that.
your niche, you had your group, right?
Yeah.
And so those were the people that you hung out with. You knew your tribe because you spent time in each other's homes and you hung out together. But now you
But
see
also, yeah,
everybody.
you're face to face with people,
Yes, exactly.
on a phone.
Exactly. And you see people going out. I see people, families out for dinner, and they're all on their phones. They're not talking to each other. And we talk about this in probably virtually every show I do about the saturation of media out there and this desperation to feel belong. But the more and more desperate we are, and the more and more we immerse ourselves into that, the more and more we lose ourselves. Because to find yourself has to come from the inside out. It's not an outside in thing. You don't need anybody else's validation to be who you are. And they're all looking for that validation on the outside instead of taking the journey on the inside. They'll always be lost and they'll always be flapping in the wind. And our youth, that's the reason why we put the book together, Our Forgotten Children, is we're leaving them behind, educationally, societally, morally, in so many ways, we're robbing our children of childhood and we're robbing them of the education they need for tomorrow. It's still an archaic education, and we're not supporting families in the raising of their children. We're not, when we grew up, I remember I used to take my doll's pram out for a walk all over the place on my own, 5 and 6 years of age. Did anybody worry about me? No, I'll come home when I came home, right? You did the same with your things, and nobody worried about it because A, there wasn't so much violence or pedophiles or anything else around. They weren't so prevalent then. But also, everybody looked out for each other's kids. And we don't have that today. Everybody's so insular. And I think, coming from a cultish type thing where you're under repression, you're under fear of being having sexual advances, you're naive to what really the world is all about, but you know that you don't belong. And then to come out into a world that is really saturated in social media and desperation to be popular, it would be it like chalk and cheese. It's like, is this a world I want to come out into?
Yeah.
So actually meeting
Well,
an older man that comes from that base, has a history, has an understanding. If his wife hadn't been the one to rescue kids, he probably would have just called the cops. All right, and handed her over. Didn't want the responsibility or too afraid that there's going to be judgment on him. But the fact that his wife had done this and he understood, he could have that understanding on that empathy of what she needed. Let's give her a chance to find her mother. And of course, it evolves from then. But I think if he hadn't had that history, that there wouldn't be the same story.
no, possibly, yeah. But also, she's quite resilient. It's interesting. I've sent my niece, she's just turning 16 next week,
Wow,
Layla.
gosh,
It,
already.
uh, and it's be interesting to see how she reacts to it. That's the one thing that's hard to get, is to get a young reader to respond in a cogent way. It's usually that, oh, I hate that, or
Yeah.
I didn't like the first page, like
But
the title.
that's actually something that's wrong with people. They're so quick to go onto social media and bash someone or criticize or this or that, that nobody actually pays attention to interact, right? To form a conversation, to have an opinion without somebody attacking. And to lead it into a conversation that can be enlightening. And if we're not doing it as adults on social media, what do our kids not? I mean, you've got Instagram, which is meant to be Insta, TikTok, and it's interesting because there's a new show come out here called So You Think You Can Dance. It's been around for a long time, and they're interviewing all these dancers for the show. And the dancers that are dancers that are use the stage that come from the heart. And then there's one guy there that goes, "Oh God, not another TikToker." They dance for the TikTok, but they don't know how to use the stage, right? And they've got all these followers on TikTok, and they think they're now a dancer. But when it comes to actually the dance floor, how do you use the stage? How do you engage the audience? They have no idea, no
Yes,
idea
they're
whatsoever.
used to being only on a phone screen, really. I mean,
Exactly.
that's the only space I need to have.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for a lot of them, it's a wake-up call. Oh God, it's a different world, right? And I think we're in a kind of a form of transition. But I think with her having him and his understanding, he's older. Of course, he used to work for NASA, which she wouldn't have known anything about because what's this space NASA? I mean, she wasn't educated anything like that. But he brings into her life a historical fascination, even about the car, why you wanted to fix this old car, all of that. And I think that having her entry into life through his experience of life actually gives her more wonderment and more intrigue, as than if she'd been found by somebody and immediately immersed into a family of teenagers and TikTok and everything else. I think that would have been too shattering.
I mean, one of the things he's trying to get her to tell her his her name, him to tell her her name. And she's very reluctant because it seems to her that her name's the only thing she owns.
Yes.
And for some reason, she doesn't want to say it. But anyway, she then says, "How old are you?" She asks for no particular reason. 75. She made a quick mental calculation. He was born in 1950. It seemed impossible. Remy laughed as he gulped some coffee. "A lot of people were born in 1950. Might surprise you to know a whole bunch are still alive, despite COVID, heart attacks, everything else that life throws at them." The girl looked away from the kitchen, hoping the food would come soon. She hadn't eaten in 2 days. "I'll never get to 20, let alone 75." "Sure you would." And it's about he just taking a sounding offer and whatever. She's never met anyone old before.
Right.
She's, eating a breakfast when they actually bring the food. She cannot believe the quantity of it. You've been
Right.
to a diner, and you know what, how much it's
Oh,
piled high.
yes.
I mean, for her, that would be a week's worth of food. It's also about he's as he elicits information from her, he does something which he's learned to do through his wife, I guess, which is that. To say, well, actually, that's pretty good. You learn that, for instance, it's an organic farm that they are actually slaves working on. But he says, that's a really, you can make a living out of that. He's turning things that she's telling him into a positive.
Yes.
One of my readers was saying, well, that, you are actually making the cult sound good. And, but of course, the cult is founded on, maybe organic principles, but the people who run it are really mean and horrible.
Yes. Yes.
If you do anything wrong, they lock you up in a old pigsty with no toilet, and they feed you, and it's pretty horrible. And she's had the courage to leave because it's incredibly hard to leave a cult.
Yes,
Don't know
yes.
anything else. You don't know any other world.
Yeah.
And to leave with a dog, I mean, that really is naive because how many people would actually pick up a girl and a dog?
Exactly, but I think it was probably the dog And knowing the dog wasn't vicious and the dog chose you, that allowed him to say it's okay to pick up the girl. And for her, okay, the dog isn't biting him, so he must be okay. So basically, the dog is the bridge, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the dog just gets in his cab as
Yes.
he's getting back in. Yeah, wants out of the rain. Dog collies hate rain, you know.
Oh yes, oh yes. Oh my God, and they stink for a long time while they're wet until they dry. So yeah, and they take ever forever to dry because of that coat.
And it's, he's a bit, he's old fart, with all of the things that go with that being old, aches and pains and all the rest of it. Whereas she's sparkling new, but emaciated and wide-eyed about everything. But also they slowly develop a sort of symbiotic relationship between the two of them as she realizes, well, yeah, he's being nice to me, but also when he falls asleep at the wheel, for instance, earlier on in the book, and she has to take over. And that's when you begin to realize, well, actually, at the farm, since about the age of 11, she's been driving tractors, trucks, and all the rest of it. And if you think that's not believable, the police yesterday here in England stopped an 11-year-old boy who'd stolen a caravan, hitched it up to a BMW that I don't know if that was stolen as well, and was driving on a motorway. And they stopped him, and they could not believe an 11-year-old would do that. But of
Right.
course,
Yeah, unfortunately, our criminals, are getting younger, and that's again
they
the
certainly
forgot.
are.
Yeah, that's another reason, in our Forgotten Children book is that we address is that when we're seeing youth going out stabbing other people for fun, perfect strangers, just attacking them for fun, is like, are we to blame the child or are we to blame the upbringing, not just the parents, but society as a whole? And when we've got that going on, we've got to look at that we're doing something desperately wrong. So,
Well, first of all, selling knives, people buy them in shops,
Yes.
and unscrupulous people sell them to it.
Yes.
You can buy stuff online,
Yep.
anything
Yes.
online.
3D guns and all of that type of stuff
And
now.
the kids pretty learn pretty quick about the dark web.
Yes.
Just extraordinary, really. And you wonder how society will hang together in
That
the
is
future.
the entire premises of that book, is that if we don't make changes now, all of these kids we're bringing up to be dysfunctional are going to be our leaders. And let's look at the current leadership in the world and question, upbringing right there. And is a change has to happen, and we've got to be aware of it, and that's the premise behind that book, is bringing that awareness, is that we can't just, I don't have kids, I don't care. It's like, the character in the book, if he hadn't had that understanding of what his wife's work is like, well, I don't want a 15-year-old, there's too much bother, I just want to go and get my fart from my Studebaker, which most people would be feeling like. But because he already had empathy because of his wife's work, he had an understanding that really he had a duty towards this child. But how many people kind of step up into that type of mindset?
More than you think, I think,
I think definitely a lot of older generation, but
you have Christian values, maybe, one would hope anyway
one
that
would
people.
hope, one would hope, yeah. So, in a lot of ways, this whole journey that they take, and of course we have the flashback because she left her best friend behind, and of course the repercussions of her disappearing actually had repercussions on the whole cult. Right. So we don't just that's not a closed door on that. We're seeing kind
No,
of
we
in the
look back,
background.
and the people investigating, first of all, her disappearance, and then the Sister Mercy, Miss Sister Merciless, arrives
Yes.
at the farm and realizes that things have gone very wrong there. And she's, but it's a bit late. These children are severely damaged by all the things that has happened to them. I mean, the girl only escaped, Amy only escaped because she found some letters with an address on it from her mother that had stopped 5 years before. None of the, in a particular cult, and it's quite, happened, this is quite happens quite a lot, is that they are encouraged to surrender their children to the cult for the good of the cult. The
Yes.
cult will raise these kids. And And they go out proselyzing and raising awareness of the cult and doing all the things that they do. But
Recruiting.
then they're not allowed to see their children again. That would break or reinforce their bonds. So yeah, I really feel sorry for them. But equally, I mean, how would I connect to this? Well, any kid who's ever been away to boarding school would understand what it's like to be separated from your parents at a young age.
Yes.
7 for me, until 18, think about it. Yeah.
Yes.
And
Yes, I was
so it
just
isn't what it's
I was
like
8 just
normally.
before turning 9, so yes.
Yeah.
And
And
it, you know,
you also
it's
think about all the torture, all the violence, all the things that go on. There was a movie Lindsay Anderson directed long, long, long time ago, If, with Malcolm McDowell.
Oh God, I remember that. Yes. Yes. Kind of did it in black and white, you know, but yes. It was very eerie, very eerie.
Ends with them shooting from the bell tower.
Yes. That actually, if anybody can find that movie, do watch it. It is
Yeah,
quite disturbing. But you know,
don't watch
those
it.
the other thing that it reminds me of is Anthem by Ayn Rand. You know,
Yes.
a futuristic world where people breed, and there's certain people that bring up kids, and certain people that, you know, clean the streets, and certain people that are there to procreate, but nobody is interactive. The interaction is not allowed, and it's kind of based on a communism because she was always affected by communism, and it's there was no hugs or love or anything like that, you know. And it kind of, when you look at a cult, it's kind of, I see that type of image there, that, you know, the children are there to be a part of the collective, you know, to do
I would.
for the whole. So it's kind of little kind of communistic bases there.
I would not want to live in an Ayn Rand world.
No,
Anyway.
very, very dark. And actually, I mean, you know, but you do see where she came from in her writings. You do see that reflection there. And as much as we don't like to see it, it's like Handmaiden's Tale. You know, when we look at that, and it's like, oh no, that can never happen. Well, in some aspects, it already is. Banned books,
Happening now
you know,
in the
it's happening.
Republican states everywhere. Yeah,
Yes, exactly.
women. It's today's International Women's Day, and one reflect on that. Now that a glass vial can be classified as a child in Alabama, which is just
I
unbelievable.
know. I know,
On
and
the
all
other hand, they're cheaper to teach.
the Oh, you mean
But
to program? Yeah, that's
it's
rich.
horrendous, really, what is happening.
Yeah, I
But
have
going back to the book here, it's this journey, not only just about him and her and the dog. As they move forward, they sort of come across the whole vision of contemporary America, what's happening now, the random shootings, the problems, the protests, the MAGA, whole MAGA thing, and then the distortion of what is the truth. I mean, if this Trump's social is truth social, is the exact opposite of truth. So it's a
Yes.
brothel like Pravda in Russia, which is the complete opposite of truth. And so as they journey into that, and he's trying to, if you put a put a positive spin on America, this is the world that you're entering, and all she sees is violence and guns going off and all kinds of
Maybe I
things.
was okay on the cult.
Well, yes, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to say, I want to go back. But she's like, wow, this is
Is
not
there
what I.
anywhere that's peaceful, right? And
And,
kind of being with him, because at this point she really trusts him, is he's become that security for her, where, you
yes, but
know.
he also he's very frail. So she suddenly begins to realize, wait a minute, he's not looking after me, I'm looking after him. To protect him. So when they come across this roadblock and the shooting starts off and they have to drive off across the old cornfield, it's he's running a risk. Not only can they be shot, but also he could have a heart attack at any time. And
Right.
he's
And also, I mean, if they did get stopped, how does he explain the girl? Did he
Precisely.
abduct her? You know, I mean,
Yeah.
there's all of that, you know,
All of
immediately.
which he's very aware of that all the time. He's thinking, you know, we need to get you some identification, and you know, same with the dog, needs to have a
A
collar,
license, yes.
license, you know, little things like that. But to her, it means that means nothing.
No.
You know, even the experience of having to pick up dog shit for the first time, and do it on the farm. I mean, farm dogs, you know. But it's suddenly realizing, oh my God, all these rules out here, just like
And I
at the
thought I
cult,
was
there are lots of
escaping
rules.
the
Yeah.
rules. Yes.
And yeah, so it's interesting developing the story, and it was hard to write in many respects. One would think a road movie, a road trip, is easy because all you have to do is just roll on to the next event. But one, you've got to survive the event,
Yes.
and then there are consequences and psychological changes, etc. So all of that is built into the story, and it took a long time to write, actually.
I do remember a book that you wrote many, many years ago, 209 Thriller Road, where you had written yourself into a pit and it took you a week to write yourself out of it. Because
Well, this
sometimes it's easy to get into a situation, but now you've got to look at a logical, rational way of how do you get out of it? And especially, and I know this has been a challenge with you, with a dog or with a kid.
Yeah. I mean, it's the sort of thing they always teach you to not do. Don't write stories about children and don't have a dog in it and all the
That's
rest of
virtually, somewhere in your
it.
books.
But the thing about it is that by having a dog, you've got to feed it.
Yes.
You've got to have a child. You've got to have feed the child. You've
Yes.
got to look after their best interests. You can think there's tons of very good movies which are about the idea of what's the adult's responsibility with either a child or a kid or whatever. You know, what is that responsibility in when push comes to shove and things are happening, and you have to step up, and to a certain extent that's what happens here. But also she has now to step up too, and to realize, yeah, God, if I don't look after this old guy, what will happen to me?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah,
And
so
of
you know.
course the Studebaker bought from, you know, bought in from the south of France. I know that you were in Miami before Christmas, and you were in the book. You wants to donate the Studebaker, but you found out the museum was not there anymore.
No. And one of the things that, well, several things struck me while I was there in December was there are no old cars anymore. There always used to be lots of old cars, old
Yes.
trucks, and whatever. They're all gone. They're just people aren't driving them, or they've been driven off the road because of regulations or
Yep,
scrappage.
kind of more Central America now, but not in populous
No,
areas or rich
no,
areas
no.
like that.
But even when we went into the countryside and went all the way over to the Gulf side, just no old cars. And which is interesting because, and maybe that's what's happening now. You know, people are thinking, oh, we can't be bothered or whatever, or if it's not in a museum. But talking of Tabitha, in the summer, last summer, we were in a French town on the way to Champagne Vineyard. And of course, I desperately needed to pee, and the only place that we could find open was a car museum, and it was filled with all of these cars that none of which I'd ever known. And
Oh, what a treat.
it was amazing. There were about 300 cars in it, yeah, and so that was fun. And even Tabitha was interested for a brief moment. So yeah.
Oh, she would be more interested than that. But Tabitha is my daughter, and she had actually won a prize. She's a mixologist, and she'd won a prize for mixing a particular cocktail and won first prize, which took her to France. And so my brother met up with her there, and they had a wonderful time, except for that she walked him nearly to death. She's one of those people that charges ahead. And so, yeah, doesn't
But
realize,
anyway,
old folk catching up.
but it was very helpful in just that, you know, a happenstance to go to the old place for these old cars, which therefore were revered, etc. And I've always had a fascination for old American cars in particular, and the old Humphrey Bogart movies and
Well, if you remember my old boyfriend Grant, he had a 1937 Chevy, and he was the second owner of it. And we used to do weddings with that, like Bonnie and Clyde type weddings and things like that. And the
Yeah,
amount of,
I put a picture on my website, me in the car.
and it was a beautiful car. And he had also some 1950 something Mercedes, etc. And you called them all name Huey, Duchess. I can't remember what this one was called. And there was a crank handle club in Cape Town in South Africa where we were. And everybody would bring their old cars and they would restore them out of pride. And when you look at it, actually, they were built to last in those days. They
They
were
were.
solid. And now, we look at a car and if it lasts 5 years, oh, it's old. It's red time to trade it in. My car is in its 13th year now. And it's like considered obsolete. So we really aren't building things to last anymore.
Well, and also, I was talking to my garage the other day because I had a puncture, and they're having to send their staff off to train to service electric cars, and because they don't know how to fix them. Obviously, there are very few second-hand ones out there, or most of them electric cars at the moment are still new, and therefore are still being treated by the garage that sold them to you, unless you put it online. I have no idea what happens to that. But the interesting thing about how environmentally great electric cars are, one is that they're not, because you're disposing of the batteries is going to be a real problem. Two, they use three times the amount of tires that a petrol car uses.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
Why is that?
absolutely. Because they're so heavy.
Ah, okay, because of the battery.
The
Yeah, it's
batteries are so
not the motor,
heavy.
it's the battery. When we were developing a motor, that was the
Yeah,
big thing. The battery was, yeah.
so the tire companies are loving it. They're having to replace tires all the time for these things. So bear
Yeah,
that in mind.
my other daughter and her husband have an electric car, and of course they love it. And of course I go down there and literally driving an hour and 40 minutes to their place, I can see six different prices of gas going down there. And
Similarly.
it's ridiculous, and so I'm moaning about it, and they have no idea what I'm talking about because they're driving electric. But I would go hybrid before I would go fully electric. And of course, the other problem with that is if they catch fire, that you've got to retrain the firemen on how to put it out because it's not the same as you would a
They're
regular car.
incredibly hard to put out.
So yeah, we're
The
still,
Studebaker in the book here as would have only 40 of this particular model were made that year. Very low number. And but it was voted the best looking car in America in 1957.
So, has your friend had it restored? Is it, does he have it, or
It's
what
still
did he?
ongoing, actually,
About
finding parts.
parts, I mean, that would be very hard to find, I mean, like in the story, you're going from Florida to Montreal to get a part, right? Because they're so hard to find.
Well, he's been very pedantic about it, really. He wants a white steering wheel because it's a white interior, and they came with a white steering wheel if you had a white leather interior. You could spray it white, to be honest, you could, but he's very pedantic and said, "I want the original.
Original, yes.
Everything in the car is original." And that's it. But one of these old Studebakers now, if it's in tip-top condition as this one would be, it'd be worth at least $100,000. So worth doing.
Well, you've
But
got some people that will maybe even spend that much to restore something, just to restore it back to life. There are many, many collectors, right? That I mean, look at Jay Leno. How many cars has he got collected from all over the world? So.
I have a neighbor just up the road. They collect Mustangs. So there are actually five Mustangs in the street the whole time, and I think that's a bit risky around here, I would have thought, but anyway.
I mean, amount of car theft, etc. But the old cars were also quite gas guzzlers. Kind
Yeah,
of,
but those, if you have particularly have the original Mustang, they were a lovely, lovely car. Later ones were not so lovely, but anyway.
they kind of churned them out there. Rather, they were an elite
No,
car when they
it's
first came
just the
out.
design that it went off. So the story in this old man, the girl, the dog, and it's about personal growth for her And it's also, oddly enough, personal growth for him, because the
Yes.
one thing, as he discovers, that his wife was childless and devoted her time to helping other children, but she wouldn't allow him to adopt, wouldn't allow them to have a child in the home. And that's based on someone I do know, that they're, all about doing good, but not about being generous to someone on a personal level, if you know what I mean. And so actually he begins to realize that actually this is something he wants to do. He wants to help her, but also, if you like,
He's
keep
enjoying her company.
her.
He's enjoying seeing the world through her eyes, kind of as a renewal for him in many ways, to see life through her eyes as she's in discovery.
Yeah, and there's one very poignant scene in it was when she thinks she's safe. She's at the beach. He's got a trailer home down by the beach, sort of just up from Melbourne way, which is near Cape Canaveral, and you can actually see the missiles being launched from there. And the she's gone for a walk with the dog to watch some balloons. These big, huge inflatable things in shapes of dogs and all kinds of things. And then a bus arrives with all of the cult members on it. And that she's like, goes into sort of shock. She thought she was safe, that they are here. I mean, therefore, they could be anywhere.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's a real moment for her. It really disturbs her to think that no matter how far you go,
Are we
they're
ever
there.
really safe? Which is
Yeah.
kind of a metaphor for life, really, isn't it? Are we ever really safe? You know,
Yeah.
there's always something we're trying to avoid, right? So, but I love the story, of somebody who kind of feels, I want to do this before I die, because he's looking at the winding down, right? This is the accomplishment I want to do when I die. My heart, my kidneys, and this and that. And then comes this youth into his life that just regenerates him, and gives him a, doesn't obviously take away any of the health problems, but gives him more of a reason to live, and gives him more of an exuberance of discovering through her eyes. And then she's also discovering things through his eyes, of respecting the past, or respecting history, respecting how things are done. And especially coming from the fact of the cult, where everything is, in the ground dirt. You are literally growing things. No, she's probably never been in a supermarket before.
No, she's never, didn't even know how to buy stuff,
So all of that renewal,
one of my favorite scenes actually is where he gets an opportunity when she finds his record collection to play Sergeant Pepper album to her, and you say, "No, you listen. There's all tons of other stuff, the modern stuff. Now you need a grounding. You need just your base point." And he makes her listens to it, and it's like, for her, it's like, wow, she's never heard music before.
A totally new world, and we all know what music does for us. So
Yeah.
I loved, when I read the beta part of it, is the, the absolutely opposites coming together and finding a common denominator.
Yeah.
And Kenya, as I said, the dog was the bridge. The dog bridged them. The character loves the dog, and it kind of maybe loves the dog, then loves the kid. And the kid trusts the dog. Oh, I'll get to love the guy. But it's kind of that dog is the glue between them. And that's what dogs do, right? They bring us together, and they have a way of speaking to our heart and soul, that we trust. Right. So if they're busy snarling at you, that's one to avoid. So the fact that the dog trusts him, and then he is kind to the dog, is already that bridge crossed.
Yeah, the hard part for me was deciding who the book was for. Normally, it's a rule in young adult fiction, for instance, that you don't have old people, or if you do, it's slightly distanced. It's always focused on the young heroes and whatever. But this is definitely an old and young partnership that develops here. So then you're
Equal
pitching it.
time.
Yeah, who am I pitching it to? And that's quite difficult because I've broken the rule about who is it for. But I think it's for anyone who, anyone young, you would share Amy's story quite easily and understand it, I think, and sympathize with her. And but everybody, perhaps not everybody, but a lot of people do have a grandpa. And as we have a grandpa running for, running for president, or two grandpas running for president, in fact.
Yes, one actually is actually articulate. I did actually watch his speech and it was actually very good.
Yes,
So
which I'm happy about.
yes, yeah, no, his State of the Union speech was very, very good and he was really on the ball. And no flapper whatsoever, whereas we know what the other one would be saying. So
So my character, Remy, is also very, he's on the ball, but he's got issues, health issues, etc., that which will affect him. And she's very sharp. It's not doesn't know much about the world, but she taught herself to read. She's, has ambitions. She's a young artist, and she likes sketching stuff, etc. And she has sort of skills that no one's told her it's okay. It's
yeah,
good to have these
she's kind of
skills.
a stem ready to flower, and he gives her that permission to flower.
No one's ever told her that she's good at anything.
You're right. Well, because basically, they were like droids. You are manufactured to do this, and you stay in your lane. You're not. And it's like, God forbid that they should read or have music or have joy, because then maybe they would question their environment, right?
Yeah,
So.
I mean, the Father Trezor, who runs the cult farm, who's now on the run, having been exposed for all
Yes,
his
I like what happened to him.
yeah, but it's like, but he mocks these kids and saying, if you leave here, the only good jobs you're good for will be for working for KFC, and it's like, yeah, it demeans them the whole time, puts them down. And if you grow up believing in nothing and you are nothing, it's very hard,
Very, very hard. Yeah, and I think actually, something else. I got another book coming out at the end of the year of Our Forgotten Seniors, and I think a book like this is one that I really want to advocate through. This is the fact that you have bridged the gap between young and old and shown the synergy, show how they can help each other, that it isn't one or the other, and it's like they have found a beautiful relationship where they both benefit. And the whole thing, nothing sexual about it, which of course everybody else thinks, oh, sexual. No, it is based on just a love of mutual respect and companionship, but they feed each other. And I think that's it's a wonderful example, because we're always saying to the young, don't dismiss your old. They paved this path, however rocky you may look at it. You wouldn't have your cell phone, you wouldn't have your computer, you wouldn't have your this, that, etc. without them. This is time to respect those that have paved the path before you and to absorb their knowledge and integrate it in your learning, not dismiss it. So I love the relationship between the two, because how they learn off each other and how from that it's mutually benefit and then benefit to anybody else that is in their vicinity.
I remember about 20 years ago reading a book, which was when a drug was developed that extends your life by 100 years, right? So everybody can live to 150, 200. But then, therefore, they don't need children anymore.
Ah, so no kids were ever born. So what happens at the end of the
Where would you
200
have
years?
children? Where would there, wouldn't be room if no one dies?
Yeah, exactly.
And that was an interesting concept, I thought.
There was actually a very interesting series called Torchwood. It's kind of a spin-off
I
from
remember
Doctor Who. And there was one where the one guy, he can't die, doesn't matter what they do to him, he always comes back to life. But and he's kind of the head of Torchwood. But there was a thing where it reversed. He became volatile and could die, but nobody else could die. And they,
Mm.
and normally it's like 300,000 people a day die or something like that. Can't remember the numbers. And what do you do with them? They're carrying on living. And but they're still living in the same condition they were in. It wasn't like suddenly they're youthful and healthy. They're in the same condition, but they can't die. And it was the impact that that had. And it really was food for thought. When a couple of those Torchwoods were really kind of,
There
ooh,
was a movie many, many years ago, a Sean Connery movie called Zardoz.
I remember that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's where everybody lives forever. And when he's a wild person who doesn't live within these compounds that are protected, who breaks in, smashes the glass and go in, and they all come up to him, and you think it's a threat, but they're all saying, kill me first.
Yes. I've lived too long. Because I mean, especially if you've, I mean, remember Logan's Run, everybody reached 21 would die. So it was the other extreme. But if you're still youthful and vital and you're still a contributor, yes, we want to live as long as we can because we've still got something to give and something to get out of life. But if you've reached a point where there isn't anything more, or your health or your mental capacity doesn't allow you to do anything more, yes, we want to exit. We don't want to stick around.
But one, I pushed in a little scene there because he used to be NASA and used to be on the shuttle launch team, and they were rather brutally got rid of when they closed down the shuttle program. But of course, he's got this trailer home still where it was near his work, and so you get to watch the Artemis take off. And I've taken a slight liberty and brought forward the date when that actually goes off to the moon again. It was scheduled for early next year, but I think it's going to be pushed back to 26 now. Yeah, I mean, space program's still going on, and it's still quite relentless. Now the race to the moon gets there and settles there, or rather starts stripping all the minerals from the moon.
I know. I mean, it's like, the Avatar movies is that instead of seeing the beautiful world, how could they duplicate this? How could they be a part of this? It's rape and pillage, which is this, the human condition. You've got, I want, I take, and I don't care if we all get depleted for it, as long as I'm okay, Jack, in the moment.
So anyway, Restoration of Amy, that's the new book. There's a cover here you can just see. There's Amy.
And she's rather a beautiful girl.
And that's the car.
The Studebaker, neat.
Studebaker
Yes, actually, I do
Golden.
remember those. Yes,
I
and of
used to have
course,
a dinghy. When I was a
this.
kid, I had the dinghy version, you know.
Oh God, yes, you had what, 3,000 dinkies?
No, I did not have 3,000
I
dinghies.
thought it was 3,000 dinkies.
No. I had about 300 dinghies.
I remember they used to come in like a match box type things.
No, they came in a box. But I was very, very proud of my. I had a whole collection of American cars when I was a kid. So I loved the Studebaker with the fins.
Yes, well, I think that your great nephew, Rowan, has taken off on that because he is car obsessed and probably has 50 cars. He loves creating patterns, parking them, traffic jamming them, driving all over you over the mountain. He is car obsessed and he gets into his world of cars and he's off doing his thing. And so, small cars, big cars, he loves it absolutely. So, I mean, he's taken after you there. But let's just
Well,
briefly look at all your other books that you have done as well, because we've done many, many shows on all of your other books, but let's remind people of other books that
well,
you've done.
but there's two in particular. I have a funny thing to tell you. One of my books is We Feel Your Pain, So You Don't Have To, which is crime fiction. And a woman wrote in and complained on Goodreads or wherever that this book didn't do anything for my arthritis. Because for some reason, Amazon always list it in the self-help section, but not in crime fiction. They always put it there because it's We Feel Your Pain.
So it's
I
that's
can't,
the automation, right? It doesn't
I
allow
have
you
tried
to.
everything. I cannot get Amazon to push it into crime fiction. It's always got to be there. So anyway, it is crime fiction. And the sequel to that is called The Book of Ashes, which is also deals with dementia. It's about a guy who made a fortune out of Bitcoin. Who's commissioned his father's life story? He was a photographer. And the writer disappears with the $10,000 advance for the book. And so he sets off my detective character to say, go find. I want the book.
Exactly.
But of course, the guys, once you start digging in about the father, discovers all kinds of things that the
That's
son
what I
has.
love about always your books. It starts off one way and then it always has its lovely twists and turns. Like in We Feel Your Pain, it's actually where this guy kind of becomes the detective, and again a dog, and again a kid, again a love interest. But it's how it all comes about. And, whenever you read your books, there's always, oh, it's this, it's that, it's this. And then when you discover what it is, you go,
Yeah.
oh, and that's the
Actually,
bit
We
of.
Feel Your Pain came out of how much pain I was in and desperate for a cure for it, etc. A bit like you, a fibromyalgia. I was in terrible pain from it. And I think it was triggered by prawns, actually,
Really?
because that's what I think triggered it. And it went from my arms down to my legs. It was just extraordinary, and it was about 3 years before eventually that left my system.
You're lucky
And
that it left you. It's been 27 years with me and it ain't going anywhere. So, yeah.
but anyway, that's where that book came from, is that I wanted a guy in pain who, there's a scam going where they obviously you can pay a lot of money, $15,000, to make your pain go away.
And
And
as
it
with
worked.
everything, too good to be true.
But now it does work. That's the
Yes.
scam. I mean, what kind of
But.
scam works,
Yeah, I
right?
know. I
And
know.
so that's what was it. That's what I wanted to make that interesting for that. And I may actually, when the weather warms up, if I can find a decent place to write, which there are less and less these days, I want to do the screenplay of the two stories.
That
And
would be a really good idea because I think that it's very visual when you read it. You can
yeah.
really see it. You really do take people, places, off cliffs, all sorts of things. And I think that whenever you do write, though, you bring landscape into things, always with all of your writing, even in space, you bring landscape into it. So you set that stage for the story to be told. You're not just on a story and one kind of like, but where is this or what is this?
I want to know what the weather is, what the
Yeah.
wind is doing, all of that, because that's real life. Well, I walked to the park today. It was freezing, wind and whatever. And I was just thinking, those poor reluctant daffodils that are trying to come out, and I just like, I don't want to,
Yes, no, it's too
Anyway,
cold when it warms up. And
but
of course,
anyway,
those are the two ones before this. And of course, you had Mission Longshot, The Haunting of
no,
A Hunting,
the hunting of G,
the
the repossession
trilogy.
of G, and the heaviness of G McGee, yeah.
Right, yes, which are wonderful. Again, will blow your mind. You're on this journey that's your art. You have so many ways of bringing different stories into the one story, the umbrella. It isn't just linear. You bring so many people into it, and one always thinks, so oh, it's this, it's that. You're taking people on the journey, and then it kind of reveals something else
Well, no,
altogether.
it just starts from a question, and the question was, how many times we all watch Star Trek movies and whatever, and they beam
Yeah.
Scotty up or
Yeah.
whatever, and well, how many people did they kill trying that
Yes.
out?
Yes.
That's
Well, it
my
kind of
that's where that came from.
the Philadelphia thing.
Yeah.
People kind of halfway between floors.
So that's what I wanted to experience there, and but obviously we're going to experiment on runaway kids.
Exactly, and the whole trilogy, everything, and of course you base that here
It's all set in around Hope area, yeah.
Hope and Whistler and all of that, and of course you did another one, another place to die, which was all about the pandemic, which you wrote years ago, and kind of
Yeah.
everything, and you put statistics in front of every chapter of reality, and a lot of people nah, and then, of course, then COVID happened.
Yeah, everything that was set down by FEMA, which is the federal emergency thing, was all down, masks, everything was
Yes,
there. For some reason, people just ignored it.
exactly.
So,
Right, and you wrote this book years before that, as you have done with other books. You kind of that visionary. Another book that I talk about a great deal on shows actually is The Repercussions of Thomas D, another youth book. But what I loved about that is the what if, it's again it's a youth. ends up going in a time warp and going back to the war, and what he reveals about the future changes the future. And
Yeah, and
it's
it's
that
a
what if
lie.
that.
Yeah, and but anyway, one little thing.
One little thing, one little conversation with the wrong person, and you've got J&K Forever based on a true story, isn't it?
Well, J&K is more set in the future of America, and that's a love story. Again, it's a religious cult based, but that would be where the only thing that is left is sort of protected areas under vicious, fairly autocratic cults. And if you don't want to be part of it, you got to run. And if they're going to run, they're going to send people after you. And so,
A little Logan-Z run there, yeah. And
yeah.
Marika, is that the one that's based on the true story?
The Repercussions is based on a true story.
All
That's
right.
the, what would happen if you
Right.
did get back. I mean, yeah.
And I would love to see a sequel of the girl with Cat.
Yeah, with Brad Blue, yeah.
Yes, I loved that book. I love because I love anything goes dimensional, and the dimensional worlds. Because I think for us to think we're only one dimension and one world is, ignorant.
A
And that,
multiverse.
yeah, we're multiverse. And I think that you take into the story into that multiverse and the discovery of it and all of that. I love that, and I love all of those books. And
I love
so,
the movie last year, Everything Everywhere. It won an Oscar.
yes, that was brilliant. And I
That was
think that,
very
it.
funny, but at the same time, just so unexpected,
Yes, very, and I'm very glad that it did. Then it just shows that people are more open now to things happening. And these are just some of the books that you've written, and of course they can find them all on samhawksmoor.com. And that's HAWKSMOOR, samhawksmoor.com.
And on
And
Amazon, of course, yeah.
on Amazon, and of course here on his show page, all you have to do is just put in Sam Hawksmoor, and all of the shows that we have done with him comes up. And we've talked about virtually every one of his books along the line, which I always love reading. I love it when you send me the drafts and I get to read it before it even goes out. And it's you've kind of really been a writer since child. This is your gift, of being able to see things in so many different layers and so many different ways, and taking, a little of this and a little of that. You're like a chef of stories. You can put all those ingredients together and produce a great dish.
Well, one would hope, anyway.
Oh, definitely. I mean, there was only one book that I found hard to read, which was that Ramapo. And that's because you put me in the book and killed me off.
Yeah, you probably deserved it at the time.
The eeny, meeny, miny, moe, was a parody of the
All
Ticket to
those
Leisure. I
are
just like,
long in the
oh, I
past.
wish they weren't. I wish they were still out there because they were brilliant. And the Curse of the Nibelung. I mean, all of those should be put back in print. They really should because they're fantastic. But you've
Anyway,
been 209 Fuller Road. All of that, they should have been back in there because you write where you have intrigue, you have a storyline, you bring characters together. But it's never just flat and linear. There's always some wonderment and something out of this world about it. And but it always leaves people questioning, oh, that was fantasy. And then is it? Is it? And then they start seeing reality around them because of the book.
Yeah, Mission Longshot's a bit like that because it's set in a very immediate future, really, where global warming is going to flood massive amounts of cities all around the world, and people are really not faced up to that at all.
No. Well, we have the worst fires in history last year in Canada, and we're poised for it again because we don't have enough water, and it's been such a warm winter and such extreme. So one areas have floods, other areas have droughts, and we're in for that extreme. I think we're going to get to a stage where there'll be no spring and no fall. It'll just be winter and summer, and maybe simultaneously going on.
I'm going to say goodbye. Good night. Thank you very much for having me on. I wish you
And
luck with your own
we,
book.
yes, yeah, thank you very much. And yes, now in four books, which is kind of crazy.
I'm catching up.
I'm catching up, yeah, but no, I'm only three as in an anthology in my own book. But I really want people to get this book. It's a delightful story. It doesn't matter what age you are. And it's actually something that a teen and the grandparent can read and have discussions afterwards. Know,
Yes,
and that's a wonderful way of bridging the gap, you know, so a
that's
family
it.
type book.
Actually, teens and older people discuss anything anymore, but if they did, they could.
We do, we do, we do.
Yeah.
And what we want to do is bring the kids in. And so I think this is a great book of having that perspective and bridging that gap. And so please go out and get the book, folks. It's on Amazon. If you put in Sam Hawksmoor on Amazon, you'll see his entire book line up there. And you know, don't stop at the one book. You know, start reading the others. I promise you, it will take you down a journey of intrigue, wonderment, but also insight. So, thank you
Thank you.
so much for being with us here, Sam.
Thank you. And I wish you luck and a happy spring.
Yes, we'd like to see spring, but also rain to fill up the water reservoir. So, yes.
Okay. I'll say good
Until next
night.
time, folks, bye for now.
We hope that you enjoyed the show. There are so many more for you here on selfdiscoverywisdom.com. Just go to the podcast tag at the top there and you will see all the many genres and all 3,000 shows ready for your listening. We are here to serve you, to help you on your journey of life, and we know that through inspiration it begets invitation. We are supported by you, the listeners, and those that we interview. Anything that you can spare us in donation would be greatly accepted, and we do hope that you enjoy the next show.